All right, welcome to Young Turks. We're gonna have a show where you're the Monday show. What is it? What is it? Okay, I got a ton of announcements for you guys. Today's filled with. But hold, I'm getting to that in a minute. A little bit later in the program, two phenomenal stories about how incredibly dumb Donald Trump is. You're gonna love them, including our allies, how they have to prepare for the child president. And it sounds to me like, based on the quotes of somebody at NATO, is watching the Young Turks. So today, don't worry, NATO. Unlike Trump, I'm on your side. Trump might have secret tapes, which, God, I mean, that's not even among the two stories proving how dumb he is. But why would you do secret tapes in the Oval Office? Why would you be so stupid? Okay, so we will get to that a little bit later in the program. And if all of that was not fun and exciting enough, in the second hour of the program, the Klan is back. And they're lighting up torches. I don't mean the goofy guys in the basement pretending to be the Imperial Grand Wizard and stuff. I mean, like, the real resurgence and of significant racists looking to terrorize the rest of us. So that's in the second hour. So hell of a show for you guys. Now, when I say you guys, I don't mean just our regular audience every day. I also mean a new audience. Ooh, what is that all about? I had two big announcements for you guys on Monday. Here comes one of them. Let's do the first one. Okay, here we go. Here it comes. Washington. We got an announcement for you guys. We're back home. We started the Young Turks, wow, over 15 years ago on Sirius Satellite Radio. We were there before Howard Stern. We were there after Howard Stern was also signed. I remember, I was going to say many people, but I think it was one listener who emailed and said, I came for Howard Stern and stayed for the Young Turks. Well, don't cry for me, Sirius XM. We're back. So today, first show on Sirius XM in many years now. Jeez and Lord mercy. It's been a long time, about 7 years. So great to be back with SiriusXM. We're on SiriusXM Progress. If you are listening right now on Sirius, you know that. You're like, I'm on Progress. That's why I'm hearing you. It's channel 127. And we are on 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. So we're live, of course, on the website every single day on tytnetwork.com at 6 o'clock Eastern, 6 to 8 o'clock Eastern. And then Sirius is carrying the program just a little bit later. So if you've got a Sirius set, Sirius XM set, channel 127, here come the Young Turks. And since we started with Sirius, like I said, literally in my living room, that's the famous story about the Young Turks, famous. and me and Dave Kohler and Ben Mankiewicz and Jesus, who's still with us, all four guys huddled around, Michael Schur. Huddled around one table that we had in my living room, and we had bought a couple of mics and an ISDN equipment and beamed it over to New York, whatever beam means. And then we had our callers, remember the steady callers, Jesus? Tim from Medford, Oregon, Adam from Colorado, Buddha, whatever happened to Buddha? That was one of the great mysteries of our old show, whatever happened to Buddha? Chris from Virginia, while we were on SiriusXM, back then just Sirius, and by the way, later we were on XM, which was back then just XM. So back home in every way conceivable. Convinced me that the estate tax was BS. That in fact, it was the first time that Paris Hilton was being taxed. Conrad Hilton had already been taxed, but Paris Hilton hadn't done anything. I mean, these are the great fond memories I had of Sirius and our, what we thought was our brilliant audience. I thought they made great point after great point. Later, when we got enough data on our audience in the internet's days, we found out, no, our audience is actually kind of brilliant. Over 80% of our audience has some college education, which is unbelievable. It's record smashing how smart you guys are. Here, the people who produce the show and host the show, not quite as much. But at least you guys are smart. anyway, and that's an awful lot of folks with a lot of education. Because have I mentioned that we have about 80 million unique viewers a month? Not a big deal. Anyway, okay. Channel 127, we're back. Washington. And some of you folks from the old Sirius days, yes, I still have the same soundboard as you can tell. It's a great lineup, by the way, they got on SiriusXM's Progress channel. You guys should all check it out, even when we're not on. 6 to 9 a.m. Mark Thompson show, not our Mark Thompson, but good Mark Thompson. There's two Mark Thompsons in the liberal world. Stephanie Miller's show, hey, you want to talk about soundboard? Stephanie's got a soundboard. Okay, Tom Hartman, the professor. Brilliant guy. He's also convinced me of several different points that I often talk about on the show. Michelangelo Signorelli's show, fantastic show, 3 to 6 p.m. And then, look at this, a new addition to Progress as well, Dean Obadala, another good friend, old friend. So that's a power lineup. And at the end, you have church, Washington. I think you guys got it. All right, check us out on Sirius if you got a Sirius set. And if you don't, hello, buy one. Okay. Now, but I'm only one exciting announcement in. You ready for the second one? Now, as you all know, we did a journalism drive right after Donald Trump was elected. We said, you guys, we got to build the best investigative reporting team in the country, hire some really skilled, young, aggressive, hungry reporters who are ready to do some investigative reporting, get out there. We had this audacious goal of raising $2 million. And you guys did it. So we've hired 12 people, a dozen people already. I told you we're going to 13. I told you we're going to hire our next reporter if we got to 2 million. And I am ready to announce who that is. So you always need a bugle call. Okay, it's Andrew Jones. Now, Andrew's a young reporter, so you might have seen his work, especially if you're a progressive and read some of these outlets. You don't have to be a progressive, of course. It is incredible how much he's done so far already. He's worked at The Intercept, The Guardian, meaning these are places he's contributed, written at, been published at, Salon, SB Nation, he also does sports, MSNBC, Talking Points Memo, Raw Story, Ebony Magazine, Wall Street Journal, Alternet, and Fusion Network. Can't wait. I think that he's going to focus on politics, of course, culture, and like I said, a little bit of sports. He says he's quick to emphasize that he's from Brooklyn, not just New York. Okay, don't hold that against him. I have not yet determined whether he's a hipster. We're going to have our other investigative reporters look into that. I want to welcome Andrew on board. Can't wait to have his contributions. By the way, he's also into music, and he has apparently performed in front of Public Enemy's Chuck D. Now, that's both musically awesome and politically awesome. And Talib Kweli, how did I do in pronouncing that name? Okay, so he joins Jordan Chariton, Naomi Kikanz, Michael Tracy, Naomi LeChance, and now Andrew Jones. And we hope to break dozens of stories for you guys and deliver on what we promised you guys. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this drive possible. And for allowing us to hire great young reporters like all the ones I just mentioned. And they've already done an amazing number of stories. And just last week, we had Naomi LeChance break the story about the rape culture and actually get footage of a confession, which was chilling. She did a public records request, got that as an exclusive. We had Jordan Chariton with the Flint Six story, the six people who were wrongly arrested in a town hall in Flint, Michigan. I mean, that's just last week, and let alone all the other stories that they've broken. So I can't wait to see what Andrew is going to do, and all of our reporters, thanks to you guys. All right, God bless your heart and Godspeed to the reporters. Let's move forward. Welcome, Andrew. Okay, now, speaking of media, Now, lately I've been telling you about how MSNBC has been basically replacing all of their progressive hosts. And I gave you a long list yesterday. Over a dozen people who have been either removed from air, fired, or moved to lower time slots, taken off of prime time or taken off of Daily Show and put on the weekends. So just as we're reporting on that, and they, at the same time, hiring hosts of new conservative and more mainstream establishment reporters and anchors, including George Will announced last week. We now find out this week that one of their most highly rated hosts, Loris O'Donnell, might be on the chopping block. Now, this is an amazing story, and it really tells you all you need to know about corporate media. It's not just about MSNBC. So, let's tell you all about it. Huffington Post breaks the story. They say Lawrence O'Donnell, host of MSNBC's The Last Word, has just 4 weeks left in his contract. And the cable network does not appear to be interested in renewing his deal. Four well-placed sources tell HuffPost that MSNBC has not been in contact with O'Donnell's team of representatives to negotiate a new deal. Now, I worked briefly in cable news, and I know a ton of folks that are in cable news, and Huffington Post also talks about it. If they haven't reached out to you with only 4 weeks left in your contract, normally that would mean you're done. They if they like you and they want to keep you, they don't want to lose you to another network, they will reach out real quick, you know, 6 months before your contract ends, even earlier than that. So the fact that they have not reached out to him yet is a very, very bad sign for Lawrence O'Donnell staying at MSNBC. Now, there's a lot of new media focus on it, so let's hope that that maybe affects their decision and focuses them on the reality of how Lawrence is doing. So let me tell you about that. The Last Word is the cable network's second highest rated program, according to Nielsen figures, behind only the Rachel Maddow Show. Who would possibly fire their second highest rated host? That's crazy. On the other hand, when this purge began back in 2011, it started with Keith Olbermann, and he was their highest rated host. Now, there's two different purges that happened at MSNBC. One was the beginning of getting rid of some progressive hosts, some because they rocked the boat and challenged the establishment and maybe challenged the Democratic Party and some personal issues, etc. Then the second wave is under Andy Lack. He was brought in recently to clean house, get rid of all the progressives and make sure that MSNBC does as its corporate parent tells it to do. Don't rock the boat, support the status quo and perhaps support this right-wing president. Now, after Olbermann, of course, then I left and Martin Bashir and Dylan Radigan and Ed Schultz and the list goes on. Under Andy Lack, as I told you, dozens of progressives have been moved out and you could watch our video from last week about that. In this case, Lawrence himself tweets this out. And normally, if you're under contract negotiations, you don't want to provoke people publicly. So this tweet also means things are not going well, and it's clear evidence of that. But listen to what he said. He said, last night, this was a couple of days ago, Maddow was number one rated show in all of cable TV, not just cable news. The Last Word was number two. That's, of course, Lawrence O'Donnell's show. Thanks for your support. We need it. Now, if your show comes in number two, I mean, I know that it's not over a quarter, it's not over a month, but on any given night, and you're beating Sean Hannity, and you come in at number two in all of cable. Ain't nobody talking about firing you unless they have a clear agenda. That they're willing to sacrifice ratings and even revenue for their network for a larger agenda. There is no other explanation. So now I'll give you some of the possibilities here in their official statements. And you know, you can see for yourself here. Look, and like I said, when Olbermann was let go, actually, come to think of it, there's been three purges at MSNBC. There was the original purge back when it was not pretending to be progressive, when it was largely a conservative network. But Phil Donahue was their number one rated show right before the Iraq War, and he was against the Iraq War, so they got rid of him. They got rid of Ashley Banfield, Jesse Ventura, and then during the Olbermann era, number one rated, he's gone. Me at six, I don't know everybody's ratings, but at 6 o'clock, I had the highest ratings they ever had at 6 o'clock. They try to move me to the weekends because, as you guys might know, if you follow the Young Turks, as I explained at the time, they said that that they were insiders and I had to start acting like it, which is unbelievable. It's like a speech out of a movie. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So that happened to me and I know it for a fact. We saw the internal memos of them talking about Phil Donahue in the first purge saying, when all the other networks are waving the flag in time of war, we can't have Phil Donahue questioning the war, and hence he was removed. Now in this third purge, like I said, it's led by Andy Lack, who was brought in by Comcast. Now, Andy Lack has been with NBC News before, and then he went to go work for some other organizations and now is back. And so Huffington Post explains, Andy Lack, the chairman of NBC News, is no fan of O'Donnell's program, sources say. Now, some say it's because he doesn't appreciate the liberal nature of The Last Word, but others say it's about the fact that O'Donnell rejected Lack's request to move his program from 10 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern time. Now, look, that last possibility could be a small part of the equation. And I was in a situation, not at MSNBC, but at another media organization, where we were asked to move time slots, we didn't, and then management held it against us. So that's fairly normal and it happens. But if you love the program and the program is going great and it's got great ratings and it's bringing great revenue, That is a small, small issue, not something that you don't continue somebody's contract over, that you basically remove them from air over. No way, no way. And part of the reason they want to move him 10 to 6 is they want to move him to a lower time slot. And he's got in his contract that he can stay in prime time. And so he said no, because it's fully within his rights. That's a tiny issue. The much larger issue is that Andy Lack is removing all of the liberals from MSNBC. Now, they can't get Rachel yet. She's in the middle of a contract. But if you take away every other progressive and all you have is Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes left, TikTok, TikTok. That's called culling the herd. Okay. Now, and by the way, look, I like Lawrence a lot. I know him a little bit, personally. And we need his voice on air at a time where we need everybody challenging Donald Trump. And don't take this the wrong way, but he's not like the world's most radical progressive, right? And I'm sure he would probably take that as a compliment. He's like, mainstream left, but good, solid. Trump's a bad guy, points it out. It fights for a lot of progressive values. My point there is, he's not some sort of fire breather where you're like, okay, I get it, man. That's too much, No, they're getting rid of all of the liberals, all of the progressives. Okay, but senior NBC News executive tells Huffington Post, no, not the case. He says about Lack, he is proud of and enthusiastic about all the work that's being done across all of MSNBC's primetime slate, including Lawrence's program. Yeah, that's why he's never ever talked to Lawrence O'Donnell since he came back in 2015. Is that amazing? Yeah. Okay, you put out any statements you want. And by the way, here, prove us wrong. Keep him on. You offer him a new contract. The proof's going to be in the pudding one way or another. If you don't renew his contract and he's off the air, you can put out all the pretty little corporate statements you like. We'll know exactly which direction you're going. Okay. Lack is said to dislike, this goes back to Huffington Post reporting. Lack is said to dislike when people attribute his cable network's blockbuster ratings to Trump. He believes, according to multiple sources, that the high ratings are largely a product of his programming decisions. You really believe that? You can't possibly believe that. I replaced all the people who were, did interesting shows filled with perspective that were getting fairly high ratings, and then during the Trump rise, they were getting even higher and higher ratings. And I come in and I replace them with milquetoast who just do really boring standard programs. And because all of cable news is lit on fire by Donald Trump, that boat happens to rise a little bit. And then I go, oh, you see my genius move. See, when you bring in milquetoast and the guy has no opinion at all, and he just reads the news actor that he is from the prompter and what our producers wrote for him, that's considered safe by our corporate parent. People love that. That's why the ratings are up. Hey, man, whatever gets you through the night. Now, it's not just that they're cleaning house of progressives. There might be another reason why Lawrence O'Donnell in particular is in trouble. They explain, if O'Donnell's contract is not renewed, the news would certainly be welcome to President Donald Trump, who has had a long-running feud with O'Donnell. Oh, okay, well, let's find out more. In 2011, O'Donnell called on NBC to fire Trump, then the host and executive producer of The Celebrity Apprentice, for pushing his racist and inaccurate birther conspiracy against President Barack Obama. In 2015, he also claimed that Trump was lying about his wealth. Trump threatened to sue O'Donnell for making false statements, but never followed through on his threat, which O'Donnell had predicted. By the way, Lawrence and I did the same thing or at about the same time. But the president only watches cable news. And that's why it's important to have voices like Lawrence's on cable news. Now, of course, a lot of you watch online content. That's why you're watching this. But for the folks who are, in a different demographic, they only watch cable news. They don't know how to turn on their computers. And they vote too. And it's important to have people like Lawrence on the air talking to them. And he made the point, which I think to anyone who's ever researched Donald Trump is fairly obvious. He doesn't have $10 billion. He doesn't have anywhere near $10 billion. I don't think he's a billionaire. I actually think he owes the Russians a ton of money. Okay, so when Lawrence just pointed out, hey, I don't think he's as rich as he is, Trump, of course, was furious. Now, why would MSNBC care about that? I mean, they claimed for years that they were progressive, kind of. They lean forward. They don't go all the way forward, don't get carried away. They just lean forward, right? Well, if your parent corporation would like to get mergers approved by this government with billions upon billions of dollars on the line, then you might care what Donald Trump thinks if you're Comcast. if you'd like to get rid of net neutrality and kill freedom on the internet, but provide those internet providers with billions of dollars in extra profits, then you wouldn't really want progressives on air, would you? And you wouldn't want to anger the president, would you? Those are very important government decisions that have tremendous impact on Comcast's bottom line. By the way, if you're a Comcast shareholder, did they discuss any of this with you? Did they say, hey, you know what? We're going to sacrifice MSNBC. We're going to take proven shows with proven ratings and proven revenue off the air, and so that we can get all the other deals approved. Did they have that conversation with you guys? Did you guys approve that if you're a shareholder of Comcast? It's an open and interesting question. So now back to our friend, the senior NBC News executive, who says about Lack, more amusing quotes. Is he bringing in more voices from all over the political spectrum? Yes. Well, okay, thank you for that admission. But that was super obvious anyway. But that's to make better programming and more informed analysis. We don't just do things to appease people in power. We hold them accountable. When's the last time you saw NBC News holding anyone accountable? It's a literal question. You remember, like, breaking news, Pentagon's full of liars. Now, it's not to say the Pentagon lies all the time, of course not. But you guys have billions of dollars. Did you ever do an investigation and challenge the Pentagon on all the civilian deaths in the beginning when they say they're not civilians, and then later it turns out they were civilians? Did you even do a follow-up story? Have you taken all of your great reporters holding power to account and unleashed them on Trump or Obama or anyone? I mean, when I was there, they didn't like me going after Obama. Anybody who's in power, you got to appease them if you own a multi-billion dollar corporation with lots of business in front of the federal government. And if you don't, you got to go. You got to go. Meanwhile, no. You brought in all these thick-necked conservatives to give informed analysis. Progressives who used to watch MSNBC, don't you want informed analysis from deeply conservative right-wingers? You know, they're a treasure trove of facts and reason and logic. Okay. And what are they thinking of replacing the last word with? Well, Huffington Post one last time explains, it's unclear who would replace O'Donnell if MSNBC declines to renew his contract. Multiple sources have told HuffPost that Brian Williams, whose program The 11th Hour is on MSNBC at 11 p.m. Eastern, has been eager to have an earlier start in the evening schedule. Brian Williams, in my experience, is a good guy, funny, smart guy. But on air, what he does is milquetoast. That's his whole point. I don't challenge anyone. I don't rock the boat. I read from the prompter. And the prompter is super safe. So steady as we go. If it's your boat, you don't want anyone rocking it. It's Comcast's boat. So if you're even rocking it a little bit, you gotta go. So it looks like they're going to head in a status quo, pro-establishment, pro-Trump direction. I mean, if you'd like to destroy the good ratings you have under Trump for holding him accountable even this much for a tiny, tiny portion of your programming schedule, well, you can kiss those goodbye. Is there any progressive who actually thinks MSNBC is a progressive channel anymore? Look, again, I should celebrate this because they're just handing their entire audience to us. But as a person who cares about this country, I want as many voices on our side to be all over media, TV, online. Does radio still exist? Yes, it does. We're on SiriusXM right now. So all those voices in all those places. But right now, unfortunately, that it does not appear to be where Comcast is headed. But hey, maybe we're wrong. So let's ask you guys. There's a poll we've got, tytnetwork.com/MSNBC. And we're asking you guys, what do you think? Do you think MSNBC is progressive? A really, really simple question. Right now, I think the polling has it at 93-7. No, ooh, look at this. The yeses are closing in. 90% no, 10% yes. But you guys vote and let us know if you think maybe that's as good as it gets. I mean, with all the Joe Scarborough in the morning for about 18 hours and the other incredibly standard news actors that they have on. And if you think that's a progressive place to watch, then have at it, Hoss. Go get them. MSNBC, my last word, can't wait for you to prove me wrong. And then you can go out and say, oh, see, it's these guys online, they don't know what they're talking about. Young Turks always attack us. It's not true. We kept Lawrence O'Donnell. We paid him even more money. We decided to keep him for 3, 5, no, 10 years. Bet you won't. Your call, not mine. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. I've got some tweets for you guys. If you want to talk to us throughout the show, this is now new school. Send it through the Twitter machine. Use the hashtag TYTLive. So Joseph L. Kasabugui, okay, sorry Joseph for what I did to your last name there. Says TYT is on back on radio. Welcome home. Thank you, Joseph. Joanna J. M. Hicks says, why so serious? Congrats. Thank you, Joanna. Laura Medit says, sweet, I've been loving following Andrew Jones for months. Happy to have him at TYT. As you know, we hire all these young reporters. I realize what a slacker I must have been. I mean, I don't know, by the age of like 13, they've already worked for like 78 news organizations. I don't know how they did that. So it's great that you were following him. I love that. All right, Christina Oak says, Lawrence is the last remotely progressive voice on MSNBC. They're replacing them all with conservative hack jobs. And Tom Sherry says, MSNBC doesn't care about ratings. They care about doing pro-corporate, pro-war propaganda. They don't need high ratings. Well, so an interesting point there by Tom, which is that, and which is not unusual, by the way, it's happened many, many times in the past, that sometimes giant corporations buy certain things for marketing purposes rather than actually making revenue off of that thing. You know that Rupert Murdoch loses over $50 million a year every single year on the New York Post? If you just care about business, you need to shut it down a long time ago. He probably views that as a marketing cost for the rest of his empire and for his political point of view. So that's interesting. And conservatives have a lot of money to throw away. Okay, let's move forward. So Donald Trump fires James Comey, the head of the FBI. That seems like a drastic and outrageous move, given that Comey was investigating for his connections to Russia and how they might have colluded, especially during the elections. So it's a Nixonian move. Let's see if it affected his polling at all, his ratings, and most especially Trump voters. Did they get swayed by this at all? Will anything sway them? All right. First of all, his decision to fire Comey, overall unpopular. Let's put it this way, 38% disapprove of his decision to fire Comey, 32% have no opinion, and 29% approve. So you can say only 29% approve of his decision to fire Comey, and that's how a lot of the press has been putting it. But that's a big number there at no opinion, about a third of the country. So the jury's still a little bit out on that, but right now, overall unpopular. Okay, how about among Democrats? Now, you're not going to be surprised by this. 66% disapprove. I'm surprised that that number is not larger. 24% just don't have much of an opinion. And only 9% of Democrats approve of firing James Comey. Now, I bring that to you only because Donald Trump thought that it would make Democrats happy. He thought it was a win-win. That's because he's not very bright and doesn't understand how politics works. If you fire the guy investigating you, the opposite party is not happy about that, no matter what history they might have had with that particular investigator. Now, now we move to the Republicans, and they're mixed numbers as well. 58% approve of his decision, 33% have no opinion, and only 8% disapprove of the decision. So now, could be higher, but overall, most of the Republicans still sticking with him, only 8% disapprove of the move overall. So has it moved his overall job ratings? And the answer is no. Number is still a 39% approval for Donald Trump's. Pretty much where he's been all along. NBC News, Wall Street Journal is the one conducting this poll. And don't get me wrong, the overall numbers for Trump is disastrous. He's at 52% negative and only 38% positive. For any president, those are terrible numbers. And for a president that is just basically beginning his first term, just past 100 days now, those are awful numbers. Usually the presidents are in the 60s or even higher at this point in their first term. He's not, he's the opposite, but it is not moving. You can't move those stubborn Trump voters. They're like, I don't care what he does, man. There's somebody investigating him because he might be a crook and he fired him like a crook. I don't care, I don't don't care. He grabbed women. He did this. He doesn't know who the leader of North Korea is. Just found out healthcare is complicated. I don't care. So that's basically what they're telling you. In fact, more depressing details about that. First of all, they say 46% of Americans, including 74% of Democrats, say they agree with the statement that Trump fired Comey to slow down the FBI investigation of Russia's involvement in the 2016 election. Now, it should be way higher than 46%, but everybody's not paying attention to every detail. Should be higher than 74% of Democrats too. But let's find out what happened with the Republicans. That's the interesting part. They say that's compared with 38% of respondents, including nearly 2/3 of Republicans, who agree that the firing was due to how Comey handled the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. That's preposterous. 2/3 of Republicans have gotten themselves to believe that all of a sudden Donald Trump cares about the well-being of Hillary Clinton. James Comey was so unfair to Hillary Clinton. The way that he went back and forth, and did that announcement right before the election, which handed me the election, among many other factors. Okay. Oh, I can't believe what he did to Hillary Clinton, even though I was chanting, lock her up. That's why Comey was fired. How could you possibly believe that? Okay, but even if you're gullible enough to believe that, well, the White House told you it's not the case. First, let's go to the Deputy White House Press Secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, where she admitted it was because of the Russian investigation. Listen.
The president has encouraged this investigation into Russia. He wants to see it reach its completion sooner rather than later. How has he encouraged it if he just fired the man who was overseeing the Russian investigation?
The point is, we want this to come to its conclusion. We want it to come to its conclusion with integrity. And we think that we've actually, by removing Director Comey, taken steps to make that happen.
By removing Director Comey, we have taken steps to end the Russian investigation. In other words, we did not fire him because of Hillary Clinton emails. We fired him to end the Russian investigation. Now, well, that's a spokesperson. Maybe they misspoke. Well, let's go to the president himself. Listen to what he says.
When I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election.
I says to myself, self, this Russia thing is a made up thing. So let me fire Comey to end the Russian investigation. He just said it. Nope, 2/3 of Republicans. Nope, it was a Hillary Clinton thing. Hillary Clinton, not to end the Russian investigation. I don't care about facts. I live in an alternate universe where facts are liberal and hate me and try to take my guns away. Okay. I don't know how to reach folks. And, you know, they're all, a lot of them are old and set in their ways, and they're bunkered in wherever they are. They probably don't know how to turn on a computer. They've never seen one in their lives. So I have trouble reaching them. But turn on your TV. That was on NBC where he said, yeah, I did it because of the Russian investigation. Nope. If he says he did it because of Hillary Clinton, he did it because of Hillary Clinton. But he doesn't even say that anymore. I don't care. I'm going to make excuses for him. All right, I guess a little bit of good news to end this. Asked if they prefer Congress or an independent commission or a special prosecutor to investigate Russia's involvement, just 15% of all Americans pick Congress, while 78% support an independent commission or a special prosecutor. Well, that's good, because that takes the distrust that progressives and conservatives have of Congress and go, you think those guys are going to be honest enough to investigate the president? No way, they're way too corrupt. So let's have an independent prosecutor do it. Great deal, can't wait. Maybe they should call up Sandra Day O'Connor. Just throwing it out there, she's a Republican. So I can't imagine Republicans would object. Former Supreme Court Justice should be, you know, really rock solid in terms of integrity. Humble suggestion. Okay. So let's move forward. So Donald Trump is about to do a visit to Europe at the end of May, and he's going to go talk to the 28 nations that are in NATO. This is our most important alliance. And so the folks at NATO are preparing for the US president, as they would with any president. But their preparations are a little bit different for this president, because they realize, as they explain to Foreign Policy, that he has a, quote, notoriously short attention span. In other words, the president is a child and can only concentrate for short periods of time. So they are doing all their briefings and all their preparations based on the idea that the president of the United States of America, the most powerful man on earth, can't concentrate, and they have to also make it entertaining. So let me give you more quotes. Staff is working to tailor the meeting to ensure no speaker will go over a 4-minute time during discussion. The US president can't concentrate for over 4 minutes on policy. And by the way, is it even policy? Well, let's go to the next quote. They explain, they're looking for ways to make the state affair more engaging. They got to put on a show for him. Maybe they're going to bring in a clown and bring in balloons. Hey, Donnie, look over here. Oh, it's so exciting. Oh, look at this, Donnie. Come on, Donnie. Oh, come over here. Now, here is where we have our missiles. Here's where we can be invaded. Have we entertained you enough? Ah! Oh, let's bring in Omarosa. Let's bring in The Rock. Let's make this thing entertaining so the idiot American president can concentrate for 4 goddamn minutes on world security. You know how I call him a child all the time? I just did it earlier. Well, it turns out I'm not alone. Unnamed source says from NATO, it's kind of ridiculous how they're preparing to deal with Trump. It's like they're preparing to deal with a child. Exactly. Someone with a short attention span and mood who has no knowledge of NATO, no interest in in-depth policy issues, nothing. They're freaking out. The whole world should be freaking out. I have 1,000 examples, but the one that I can't get past is that we're in the middle of a potential devastating military conflict with North Korea. And the president did not know who the leader of North Korea was. Not only did he keep referring to him as this gentleman, he thought it was the same guy who was in charge while Obama and Bill Clinton were president. That's 3 different guys. And he didn't know it. He thought, oh, well, Clinton couldn't handle this gentleman, neither could Barack Obama. My God, you sent an aircraft carrier over to North Korea. You've threatened a devastating war with them. You didn't take 1 minute to find out who the leader of North Korea is. Of course our allies are worried. Of course they got to put on a show like he's a freaking child. He's Joffrey Baratheon. That's who he is. I don't have to find out what's going on. Huh? Russia told me that I'm not supposed to like NATO. I don't know. Hey, why haven't you paid your bills, NATO? That's what Vladimir told me to tell you. Maybe they are watching the Young Turks a little bit. One senior NATO official said that they are, quote, bracing for impact. I told you to brace for impact, and here we are. Okay. Now, another story about what an idiot our president is. Next one. Politico has a very interesting story about how to get Donald Trump's attention and how to get people fired from the White House. Okay, so they explain. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus issued a stern warning at a recent senior staff meeting. Quit trying to secretly slip stuff to President Donald Trump. Now, why? Well, they're going to give you examples. First one is, they explain, just days earlier, Katie McFarland, the Deputy National Security Advisor, had given Trump a printout of 2 Time magazine covers. One, supposedly from the 1970s, warned of a coming ice age. The other, from 2008, about surviving global warming, according to 4 White House officials familiar with the matter. Now, this is already bad enough. She's presenting it as if it's like 2 different covers recently. One's theoretically from the 1970s, the other was from 2008. And of course, predictably, Donald Trump loses it. But it actually gets worse. So Politico further reports, Trump quickly got lathered up about the media's hypocrisy. But there was a problem. The 1970s cover was fake, part of an internet hoax that circulated for years. Staff chased down the truth and intervened before Trump tweeted or talked publicly about it. So let's break that down. Number one, well, what does a clown do? He surrounds himself with other clowns. So he hired Katie McFarlane because he saw her on TV, saw her on Fox News. And she, like everyone else on Fox News, doesn't understand the difference between real news and fake news. She's like, oh, I saw something on the internets. It came across the interwebs, and so I showed it to Donald Trump. No, you schmuck, you're part of the national security apparatus. You're the deputy national security advisor. You might want to ask somebody. You have a staff that hundreds, thousands of people. Ask somebody. No. So that clown gives it to Donald Trump, who's a further clown. My favorite part of that story is they have to rush in and basically tackle him before he tweets about it. Because they're like, oh no, the child has got the wrong information. He's going to go start some sort of new controversy on Twitter. Somebody rush in to save us from that schmuck who's the president before he goes on tweeting, before checking with anything else. Okay, now further embarrassing details here. Aides sometimes slip him stories to press their advantage on policy. Other times they do so to gain an edge in the seemingly endless Game of Thrones inside the West Wing. Now, the one upside of the story is it turns out the president does in fact read. Some had questions about that. Okay, so that's why, and he has a bit of an open door policy. Now, normally it's very careful what you put on the president's desk. It's usually vetted, it's gone through intelligence, it's gone through all this stuff. Not in the Trump era. People slip into his office, they put an article in there. He's like, oh, what is this? Oh my God, I'm so upset, what happened? Oh, somebody hand me the tweeter, right? So people know that, and they're like, well, since the president's an idiot and doesn't double check anything, I'll just put something in front of him that's to my advantage and to the disadvantage of my enemies within the White House. Any smart manager would see through that trick in a second, but that's not who he is. He's a pathetic little child. Okay, so they explain the consequences can be tremendous. According to a half a dozen White House officials, those aren't liberals. Every one of those White House officials is conservative, and others with direct interactions with the president. A news story tucked into Trump's hands at the right moment can torpedo an appointment or redirect the president's entire agenda. For example, here, Elliot Abrams was supposed to be number two at the State Department. Rex Tillerson wanted him, and somebody put an article in front of Donald Trump that Elliot Abrams in an op-ed had attacked him during the campaign. He's like, nope, Elliot Abrams gone. So if you don't want Elliot Abrams, you want your guy in there, all you gotta do is stick something in front of him. Oh, no, Elliot didn't like me. Me no like Elliot. Somebody hand me Twitter machine. Me no like Elliot. So he single-handedly ended Elliot Abrams' chances at the State Department. Okay. So then there's a story about this conspiracy theorist online, Charles C. Johnson. He's done many absurd things. He's gotten kicked off Twitter. And he's even on rare occasion apologized for the things that he made up, which is a significant number of stuff. It doesn't matter. All you need is any article. Donald Trump reads whatever's in the prompter, right? Whatever's in front of him, he reads and doesn't question because he doesn't have the mental capacity to question it. So they explained that no matter that Johnson had been permanently banned from Twitter for harassment, or that he offered no concrete evidence, or that he had lobbed false accusations in the past and recanted them, Trump read the article and began asking staff about Walsh. Now, in this case, what they're talking about is a woman named Katie Walsh, who was the deputy chief of staff and worked with Reince Priebus for a long time, who's the chief of staff. And Johnson had written an article about how she was one of the leakers inside the Trump administration. So somebody conveniently takes this article that's got no evidence at all, no facts behind it, and puts it in front of the idiot in chief. And he's like, doesn't check who wrote it, what's their credibility or anything like that. Is it coming from my intelligence officials? Is it coming from a blog? Is it coming from the New York Times? Where is it coming from? So, Katie Walsh, me no like her. So Katie Walsh out at the White House. She's gotta go be a lobbyist and get rich. Anyway, but she's now at a Trump friendly think tank. That's where it's the farm they sent you when the child gets upset with you. But she's out. She's out of the White House, gone. Because somebody put a nonsense article in front of Donald Trump. This is how he makes decisions. God help us all. Okay. But as a smear, one of Priebus' closest allies, Walsh was his chief of staff at the Republican National Committee, vaulted from an obscure web posting to a topic of heated conversation in the West Wing, setting off many internal investigations into who had backstabbed Walsh. Now, that's part of the reason why Reince Priebus is now going around going, stop putting things in front of Donald Trump. He is too stupid to understand the source. So run it by me so that I can double check before he fires more people or tweets things that aren't remotely true. Okay. White House and former campaign aides have tried to make sure Trump's media diet includes regular doses of praise and positive stories to keep his mood up, a tactic honed by staff during the campaign to keep him from tweeting angrily.
Good Donnie, good Donnie. Look, Donnie, look, they like you. This guy, I don't know what it is, Bob Johnson, Bob Smith. Bob Smith likes you. Ooh, me like Bob Smith. Me in a good mood. I don't need to tweet now.
Oh, that's so sad. That's so sad. I almost wish I hadn't heard it, even though I can't stand the guy. It's pathetic. It's so ironic because he ends the tweets with things like sad baby. That's exactly what he is. A sad little baby that has to be cheered up every once in a while. Did they also change your diaper while they were at it, Donnie? There's universal agreement among Trump advisors on this. The best way to focus the president's attention on any story is to tell him about it personally, even if it is one of the papers he's already thumbed through. But officials say it's a high risk, high reward proposition because Trump's frustrations at bad stories can easily boomerang against those delivering him the news. If you're an effective manager and somebody comes and gives you the news, you name it, revenue's down, your ratings are down, your polling is down, whatever it is. What kind of a moron thinks he's the one that caused it? No, he's the one who delivered the news. He's doing you a favor by giving you information, and then you could react to that information anyway, maybe to fix your revenue, ratings, polls, whatever it is. But Trump has this much mental capacity. So he's like, Bob gave me news. Me not like news, me not like Bob. What an utter fool. Most powerful guy on earth. God help us all. Okay, finally, another story from GQ explains how even people who were his former staffers, like Corey Lewandowski, who used to be his campaign manager, not in the White House, can use television to influence him, because it's not just the stuff that's put in front of him. Of course, he watches cable news all day and mainly Fox News. So, according to a big profile of Lewandowski in GQ, the one-time Trump campaign chief told medical AI startup Flow Health that he could help them get Veterans Administration Secretary David Shulkin fired by bad-mouthing him on Hannity's Fox News program. This story has lots of ups and downs, which are funny. This company wants to get this guy fired because he's actually doing his job within the Trump administration. That's a minor miracle, and actually holding them accountable for the mistakes that they've made. They're like, so let's just hire a lobbyist to get him fired. Problem solved. We don't have to fix our internal problems. No, we use crony capitalism and political lobbying to just take out the guy who's causing us a problem. So who do we go to? We go to Lewandowski. Lewandowski's like, it's easy. You just go on Hannity's program. You know he watches Hannity. And you say something bad about him, he'll be fired tomorrow. Because the president is an utter idiot. He'll be influenced with no problem at all. Now, as it turned out, Lewandowski is also incompetent. So he went on Hannity's program. I don't know if he decided not to do it or if he forgot to do it, but he didn't do it. So then the company fires Lewandowski's firm because they're like, well, you told us you could get the guy fired and then you didn't. This is what corruption's about, and you didn't deliver on your corruption. So they let Lewandowski's firm go. Now Lewandowski also botched a number of other things and now is no longer with that firm. But as they explain here in GQ, Lewandowski proposed using an upcoming appearance on Hannity's Fox News program to brand Shulkin, quote, bad hombre who needed to be fired. After seeing him trash his VA secretary on his favorite cable news channel, Lewandowski said Trump would almost certainly call him to find out what was up. See, they know how they can manipulate him. They all know that he's stupid. And they think, look, you put something in front of him, whether it's on cable news or in the papers, and it doesn't matter what paper, it just has to be printed out and put in front of him. Then he's going to ask you what to do, and that's when you manipulate him, because even inside the building, they all know how painfully stupid the president is. God help us all. Young Turks. All right, we got a bunch of great tweets, so let me read them to you as quickly as I can. Jay writes in, if Trump went through a trailer park with a shotgun shooting people on Facebook Live, would that hurt him with his base? Well, remember, he said, yeah, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and they'd still support me. And so far, he's been proven right about that. Maybe the only thing he's been right about. Okay, Mr. Charles says Republicans believe he fired Comey because he didn't prosecute Clinton. They probably, a large portion of them probably are under that misimpression. But technically, they said, the Trump administration said they fired him because of the things he said about Ms. Hillary Clinton that were derogatory, when he shouldn't have given a press conference about her at all. So that's what Rosenstein's memo was, that theoretically precipitated the firing. And in fact, even Roger Stone said, yeah, it was because of all the things he did wrong to Hillary Clinton. Okay, Gabby Merida writes in, no, actually, let me go to Mike first. If the investigation is as far along as I hope it is, Trump may just stay abroad and then seek asylum in Russia. Could you imagine if Trump runs to Russia to seek asylum? Whisper of a dream. Gabby Marina says, if Trump is Joffrey and his administration is Game of Thrones, does that mean 2020 will be a political red wedding, or maybe 2018? The answer is yes. I hope to be playing the Reigns of Castamere on election night on 2018. the Justice Democrats send their regards. Oh, you want to talk about whispering of a dream? JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay, I Am Sock says, just so you know that all these slipped in memos and stories are printed in at least 48-point font. Probably true. Kicking It says, wow, Hillary lost to this guy. You know, every once in a while that thought pops into my head. And then I think these establishment Democrats want to run more races against Republicans? Hell no. Step aside, Butch. JusticeDemocrats.com. And finally, Marie Jacobson says, and this man has access to nuclear bombs. That's why I keep saying, God help us all, even though I don't believe in God. Okay, let's move forward. More shenanigans from Trump. Okay, recently Donald Trump tweeted something he shouldn't. That's the beginning of about half a dozen stories a day. But this was about James Comey. Now, remember, this is the guy that he fired because he was investigating him. Head of the FBI looking into Russian connections with Donald Trump. He fires him, says I fired him because of the Russia connections to Lester Holt on NBC. It's an incredibly stupid thing to say. Opens him up to obstruction of justice charges. Well, not satisfied with that, he sends this tweet which opens him up to witness tampering plus other problems. He says, James Comey better hope that there are no tapes, in quotes, of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Now, first of all, James Comey could testify and has been asked to testify about your connections to Russia in that active investigation. So you might not want to say that publicly. That could be legally problematic. Second of all, what? You've got tapes? Now, if you don't have the tapes, why are you bluffing and saying outrageous, weird things? That's only going to get you in trouble. If you do have the tapes, boy, they're going to get you in much worse trouble. Oh my God. So is Trump really, again, I'm sorry to repeat it, but it's true, this stupid that he would tape his conversations in the White House that have to be riddled with 1,000 different problems? Oh, please tell me he taped them. Please, please. And it turns out, well, when you look into it, and the Washington Post did, he has a long history of taping his conversations. Yes. Okay, now when they asked Sean Spicer, by the way, hey, does he have tapes? Spicer said, the president has nothing further to add on that. And he said it three times. He refused to say whether the White House still has an active taping system. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, he got himself. Oh, you schmuck, what are you doing taping the conversations you're having? There's no way there isn't like 1,000 terrible things on those tapes. You think this guy's savvy enough to cover up his crimes, etc.? Oh, you know that he's reaching out to Mike Flynn right now, and they have to keep telling him, sir, Mike Flynn is part of the Russian investigation. They're looking into his illegal activities. You cannot call one of those witnesses. You can't call Mike Flynn. He's like, why not? I'm the president. Mike Flynn's a good friend of mine. I just want to talk to him. Why can't I call him? They're like, no, you can't call Mike Flynn. That would be illegal. You know why he wants to call Mike Flynn? Because Mike Flynn knows. He wants to make him an offer. Please say it on tape. Let him call Mike Flynn. Let him call him. Okay. Throughout Donald Trump's business career, now this goes to the explanation of how often he's taped, some executives who came to work for him were taken aside by colleagues and warned to assume that their discussions with the boss were being recorded. John O'Donnell, who used to run Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino, said, there was never any sense with Donald of the phone being used for private conversations. He said, talking on the phone with Donald was a public experience. You never knew who else was listening. Oh, all the Trump tapes. And then when they get rid of them, because you know the knucklehead said something stupid on the tapes, then that's going to be a different crime. Almost exactly like what Richard Nixon did. There's some chance he doesn't know who Richard Nixon is. No, look, of course he knows Nixon. I say of course, I don't know if he knows anything, right? But does he know that Watergate became a huge issue because of the tapes and that you shouldn't do the tapes because it'll only get you in further trouble? He doesn't know who the leader of North Korea is. He didn't know healthcare was complicated. He doesn't know anything. So the schmuck probably taped inside the Oval Office and then said it publicly. God, oh my God. This is where his stupidity helps us. Anyway, More background. Trump's fascination with recording his conversations reaches back to the early years of his real estate career, when he installed in his 26-story office in Trump Tower a system for surreptitiously tape recording business meetings, according to an eyewitness account in Harry Hurt's 1993 biography, Lost Tycoon. And BuzzFeed News reports that last year that Trump listened in on calls made by his staff at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. So he's been taping for a long, long time. Then during the campaign, he was having a conversation with the Washington Post, and here's what happened. Donald Trump says, by the way, you don't mind that I'm taping this conversation, Washington Post. No, we're taping it as well, that's fine. Trump, okay, good. And so we're all on this, because I'm taping it also. He's been doing it forever. You think you could teach this old dog new tricks? He's been taping inside the White House. Oh, can't wait. Can't wait to hear those tapes. Okay, last spring when two Post reporters visited Trump in his office for another interview, Trump, in the middle of telling a story about how he demolished the Manhattan landmark that had stood where Trump Tower is now, asked his guests if they would like something to drink. In the same quiet voice in which he'd been conducting the interview, Trump said, okay, two waters and a Coke. The interview resumed, and less than a minute later, a secretary walked in with the drinks. No one other than the reporters and Trump had been in the office, and Trump never signaled a drink request to anyone outside the office. And it goes on and on, and they have all these descriptions of the secretaries knowing exactly what was being said, let alone other people that knew conversations that they thought were private with Donald Trump. He's been taping for decades. Now, finally, Washington Post explains, a post-Watergate reform measure, the Presidential Records Act of 1978, requires presidents to preserve and archive recordings made in the White House. So, you can't get rid of the tapes. If you do, that's a different crime. Na 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 na. You know that thing about if you never learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it? Well, this is the chickens coming home to roost. Donald Trump has never done any research, has never done any homework, spoiled little brat, never bothered to learn anything about history. So it appears he just repeated it. Can't wait. Okay, I will tell you another story real quick, because it's going to relate to one of the stories that Anna's going to tell you about the rise of the new Klan in the so-called second hour. That's not the right one. The one with the E is the right one. Sad day. Anyways, we're moving on. Okay. So unfortunately, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center and anyone else who's tracking it, hate crimes are on the rise during Trump era. They explain that according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Independent does, 1,051 hate crimes were reported in the month following Donald Trump's election. Now that's a lot. And former white supremacist Chuck Leek, who now works to combat this rise of white supremacy, says, the white supremacist movement is far more active in the last 6 months than I have seen it in 10 or 12 years. Now, look, they already got super active under Obama. They'd been dormant before, and they still existed. But under Obama, they rose to new levels because they had something they really, really motivated them to fight back. And then Barack Obama made a terrible mistake. There was a report that was prepared under George W. Bush that explained that right-wing extremism was on the rise, and that was leading up to the election and even before that, right? So it had been dormant for a while, started to rise at the end of Bush, and then really takes off under Obama. But the report was prepared under Bush. Obama releases it, and the right-wing gets really mad. They're like, oh, how dare you talk about right-wing extremism? This is a plot and a conspiracy against Rush Limbaugh and Fox News. And Obama, as usual, buckled under the pressure and decided to actually lower the funding of groups inside the government looking to fight against right-wing extremism and terrorism. Now, that's a terrible idea, but at least the group still existed until now. So Donald Trump has reportedly frozen $10 million of grants destined to counter violent extremism in the US. More than 30 organizations were pegged by former President Barack Obama's office to receive funding, although the White House has since put the grants on hold pending review. You want to fight right-wing white extremism? That's Donald Trump's base. Why would he agree to that? He's going to cut all of your funding. Okay, the Trump administration was reportedly pushing to erase neo-Nazis and white supremacists from the US government's counter-extremism program in February by moving it to focus exclusively on Islamist terrorism. Now, the reality is that right-wing terrorism in America kills far more people, there's far more attacks than Islamic extremism. Does that mean that we should only focus on right-wing extremism? Of course not. Any rational human being would say, hey, the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, etc., should look at all of the threats, whether they're coming from Muslims, left-wing groups, right-wing groups, who cares? Our job is to keep people safe. But no, under Obama they got reduced, under Trump they're like, no, don't even look at the right-wing extremists, don't look at neo-Nazis, don't look in to see if they might cause violent acts, only focus on Muslims, even though we know that that form of extremism in the US leads to a lot less attacks. Who cares about facts? Who cares about keeping people safe? Remember, he said he was a law and order guy? Doesn't care. All he cares about is his own political base and ideology. And if it's filled with neo-Nazis, well, then he's going to make sure that they get away with it. And again, that's not me. He's the one defunding them. So if you get mad about how he's helping neo-Nazis get away with things, don't get mad at me. Get mad at him. He's the one defunding those programs. All right, finally, the reclassification would remove its work combating far-right attacks and mass shootings, such as the massacre of black churchgoers in Charleston, which are rarely classified as terrorism by American authorities. So, mass shootings, I know, the right wing thinks, oh, that's awesome, it's gonna lead to more gun sales. Unless, of course, it was one of your family members who got shot, then it's not that awesome. But it doesn't matter, we're not gonna study that anymore, and we're not gonna pursue it or track it. And right-wing terrorism, we won't even call it terrorism, and now we won't even investigate it. Given that that is a much larger problem in America, well, we're all a lot less safe under Donald Trump now. But the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists voting for Donald Trump must be ecstatic. I guess mission accomplished. All right, when we come back, speaking of those white supremacists, they're back literally with torches in the South. We'll show you that devastating story and a lot more when we return.